Hi, I'm Parveen Patel, a senior developer in Microsoft Research, and we have with us Murari Sridharan, who is a development lead of TCP/IP in Windows Core Networking. So, Murari, what are you going to tell us about today?
So, we're going to talk about the Cloud Faster project today, which is essentially making the web faster for services, for your search, for your social experiences, you know, whatever you do on the web.
So, what does that really mean?
So there are two aspects to Cloud Faster. One of them is the changes that we can make on the backend server that sort of speeds up the web transfers. The second part is a new algorithm that we have developed that improves communication inside the data center. And today we're going to focus primarily on the second aspect of the project.
Okay, so more about the data center and the communication within the data center.
Okay. So The sort of holy grail for transport has been to really deliver on very good performance when you have a mix of both short latency sensitive flows and long throughput sensitive flows.
What are some of the examples of such flows?
To demonstrate the examples of the applications in the data center, we have used the following design pattern, which I'll explain. It's called partition and aggregate. What happens is, you have a problem that you then split into multiple sub-problems, which you spawn to different servers, which then might split it even further into several smaller subsets, and each of these get executed on servers, and then gets accumulated back, and that's the result that goes out to the web user. Let's look at the following example. So I have this thing called an aggregator that is going to split the problem into multiple sub-problems, and it may send it to several other aggregators, right? And this may get split further and go into several worker nodes which actually do the work. Now, the way this will work is the worker nodes will do the computations, and then the results are sent back to the aggregator node, and then these aggregator nodes will do a similar work and then send it back to the aggregator node here.
Okay. So this is how you compute things over very large data sets in a distributed manner.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Now, the latency part comes in because we cannot take too much time to solve each sub-problem. That is because the user is probably typing a query and he needs an answer fast. So there are SLAs associated with these, right? So for instance, this guy typically has something like 250 to 300 milliseconds to complete the task. That means at this layer, they probably have something like 50 milliseconds to complete the task, which means at this layer, he only has 10 milliseconds to complete the task. So any delay that happens in the network in terms of communication between these nodes is going to eat into that time. So if I'm spending most of my time just doing networking, that means the actual computation time, what I have is very limited, and that directly affects the quality of the result.
And what happens when one of these guys misses the SLA?
So when one of these guys misses the SLA, you don't have a choice but to ignore them. So because if you take more than this much time, the user is not going to come back. So the user has a tight time bound, and the quality has to be good. So
user will miss out on some results, yeah. So the quality will be poor.
Yeah. So
okay.
This was aggregating all the pictures from your, friends in a social network, and if these workers are taking too much time, then you're going to not get the full set and things like that, right?
Okay. So tell us about how TCP does not work for this case.
So data centers have these thing called switches, which sort of connect all the servers up, right? And these switches are typically commodity switches, which cost about $2,000, right? Okay. Now, the way these switches are constructed is they typically have, they'll have a whole bunch of input, and then they'll have a whole bunch of output. This mm-hmm. is the general switch.
Yep.
Now, the commodity switches, because of cost reasons, the way they construct these switches is they have a common amount of shared memory. Right? Yep. This shared memory is sort of shared across all the ports. Right?
Yep.
So at any given point in time, the shared memory can be allocated evenly or, depending on the load, it can get more to some queue versus the other and things like that.
I see. So depending on the amount of traffic on a given port, input or output, the memory may be reallocated.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So this is the basic, the switches that we have to deal with in the data center. The reason why I'm talking about this is on the internet, this problem doesn't exist in the sense you typically go through these routers, and the routers have a lot of memory. So they actually have per port memory as well, right? So I'm sort of leading up to certain problems, so it's important to sort of get the switch design, you know, out of the way. And now we can talk about...
I see. And then TCP was designed for those wide area switches.
TCP was designed primarily for those wide area switches, and we can talk about, we will talk about some of the issues with the current solutions, right?
Yep.
Now let's look at, so we talked about short and long flows.
Yes.
Let's look at some of the interactions, right? Now, we're going to take three cases, right? The case A is, you know, you have a whole bunch of short flows that are all going through the same port. Okay? This is case one.
Okay, so that's when you were talking about partition aggregate, when somebody's aggregating data, suddenly everybody's sending traffic to that one guy.
Yes, okay. Exactly. Okay. That's the case where you have these short flows going through the same queue, right?
Yep.
If you look at the application here, there are actually three types of traffic, right? One is the query that the user sent saying, hey, here's what I want. The second is, okay, let me go do the computation, which is the aggregated part.
Okay.
And then the actual data stored needs to be distributed to everybody, right? And that is what we call background traffic. So I'm going to define three types of traffic now, query, and then short messages, and then background, right?
Okay. So this is what the user wants to do, and this is what keeps the data fresh and interesting. And this is what makes the query happen and make sure everything is working smoothly.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Now, the first case is you have only these short messages going through a queue.
Right.
The second case is you have a mix of both background. So, you know, I'm going to draw it as a thicker line or maybe a different color. So
these are big flows which are transferring huge amounts of data into the data center. Okay.
And then, you know, they could mix with some short flows, right?
Yeah.
And then the third case is the short flows are actually going on a different port.
Yeah.
So they're going to a different set of servers.
Mm-hmm.
And the background flows are going to a different set of servers, and the short flows are going to a different set of servers.
I
right?
see.
So we'll look at the problems in each of these cases, right?
Okay.
Now, when you have a lot of flows going through the same port, that means the switch needs to take all its memory and allocate it to that, right?
Yeah. Like you mentioned, it's a shared memory switch, so it needs to take memory from other ports and allocate it all to this one port that needs it right now.
Right. Now, if you're lucky and you have enough memory for a certain set of flows, then things are fine.
Yeah.
But let's say you run out of memory because of, you know, either because it's too much for one or it's being used up anywhere else, that's going to cause packet losses, right?
Yeah. That's
so.
Right.
And this problem is widely known in the academia as the in-cache problem, right?
Okay.
So the in-cache problem means you have a whole bunch of synchronized short flows that are trying to compete for the same resource, right?
Okay.
Now, that's one problem, right? So we'll list down the three set of problems, and then we can see how we solve them.
Yep.
The second problem is queue buildup. Now, anytime you take a lot of memory and allocate it to one queue, that means any short flow that comes in at that time is going to see an increased delay.
Right.
Right? That's what I mean by, you know, queue building up.
So if a query message was to be sent on the same port that has a lot of background traffic, it will just see delay because of the background traffic.
Okay. And it goes back to the problem that I stated earlier, which is today there is no solution deployed. Even though there are solutions on, you know, there's a lot of research, but there's no deployed solution that actually solves all of the problems, right?
Okay.
Now, the queue buildup is the second problem. The third problem is essentially the fact that some large flows are consuming buffers on a few ports,
right,
and the short flows don't have any.
I see. So there's no buffer left for,
there's no
for,
buffer
the, for the short flows.
So we'll call that buffer pressure, right?
Okay. So that's like, you know, one application taking all the memory in your computer,
right,
and the other ones just aren't able to get much done.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, we can talk about why today's solutions sort of fall short to solve all of the problems, right?
Okay.
The larger philosophy here is, as I'll show you, there's multiple ways to solve the problem. One of them is to get the customers to buy a lot of expensive hardware with a lot more memory. Or you could make the software smart enough so that you can use these, you can still continue to buy these commodity switches, which reduces the cost of your data center, right?
Yes.
So that's why we want to make the software smarter.
Yeah.
So we can talk about, you know, why TCP can and cannot solve the problems, right?
Okay.
Now, this problem, which is, you know, which is basically several synchronized flows, you know, going through the same resource causing timeouts, right? The way people are looking to solve this problem, and there are some papers, recent papers, which talk about it, is by reducing the cost of a timeout. So TCP, every time it loses packet and it cannot recover, waits for a certain amount of time. And that time, today, by default, is something like 300 milliseconds. Right?
I see, yeah. And that's pretty long for a data center.
Yes.
Because, like you mentioned earlier, the SLA itself is about 300 milliseconds.
Yes, exactly.
So one timeout can really kill you.
Kill you completely.
Right.
Okay. So reducing the timeout definitely improves the in-cache problem, right? Mm-hmm. Because now, instead of waiting 300 milliseconds, say you wait only for like 10 milliseconds.
Right.
That sort of helps. But
okay.
10 milliseconds still, as you said, is the total budget that the worker thread probably has.
Right. Right.
Right. So.
Right.
It's still not enough, right?
Okay.
Now, the commodity switches are helping this problem by trying to allocate all of the memory to one port, and
okay.
that helps.
Right.
And that helps this problem, right? But we'll see that just reducing the timeout does not solve these problems, right?
Right.
So let's look at this problem, right? Which
mm-hmm.
is, and for this, we need to understand how TCP works a little bit, right?
Okay.
Now, the way TCP is designed, it needs to probe for capacity. That's how it sort of figures out how much capacity is left in the network. Because when you come in, you don't know, you know, what's going on in the network, right?
I see.
It has a probing phase, which, you know, for the purpose of this example, we'll assume a linear probing phase, right? So it sort of tries to probe linearly for bandwidth.
Okay, so it tries to take more and more bandwidth in the network,
right.
And then kind of sees what happens.
Right, right.
Okay.
Now, the way, this is essentially, let's say you have a, you know, 1 gig link.
Okay.
Sort of represents, you know, 1 Gbps.
Okay.
Rate.
Yeah.
And this is the queue that you will build up if multiple people send at 1 gig, right?
Okay.
So
okay.
assume that this is the network utilization on your bottleneck link, right?
Okay.
Let's look at how, and there are some connections that are probing, right? Now, the combined, everybody is sort of probing linearly. So let's say that at some point in time, you were here and everybody is sort of probing, right?
Yeah.
Now, once they cross this point, because they're all sending a line rate,
yeah.
you're going to start to build up a queue.
Right.
Right?
So their combined
rate
is higher than what the link can support.
Yes. Yes.
So
we'll call this queue,
yeah.
right? And this is the total link rate, right? Line
yeah.
rate, right? So actually, this is easier if it's just manually part. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Now what's going to happen is. So the way TCP is designed, it's going to keep probing, and at some point it's going to hit a loss, right? Let's say at this point your queue is full, you don't have any packet, you don't have any space.
I see. So once the switch or the router runs out of the queue, it's just going to start dropping packets.
It's going to start dropping packets, right?
Yeah.
Now TCP operates in two ways. One, it waits for packet loss.
Okay.
Then as soon as it sees packet loss, it cuts the rate by half, right?
Okay.
And then it probes again, cuts by half, probes again, right? That's
and
what
then all the flows are doing the same thing.
Right?
Okay.
Now, on the internet, because of the fact that you have a large number of flows,
right.
the flows do not get synchronized, right?
I see.
As a result, you know, it's not like all the flows are, you'll never get like a, you know, a nice clean sawtooth where everybody is synchronized.
Right.
But inside the data center,
mm-hmm.
That's not the case, right?
I see. So inside the data center, we have many more flows that are trying to send at the same time, or start at the same time, trying to send the same amount of data.
Yes.
But in the wide area, you know, at home, everybody's browsing, you know, different websites, doing different things, so it kind of evens out.
There's a lot of room for
yeah.
jitter to creep in,
okay.
and that helps,
okay.
right? But in the data center, it's going to look a lot more synchronized, right?
Yes.
Now. This is how TCP is typically designed, right?
Yep.
Now, if you look at this, you'll notice two things, which is TCP, no matter how much buffer you give, will try to overflow the buffer and then hit a loss.
I see. Yeah.
Now, so that means that if you are, let's assume that you're a short flow and you
yep.
happen to come in during this time, right?
So there is no buffer left for this new flow to, you know, so it's
even
okay.
Even if there is buffer left, it's going to get delayed behind all of the...
That's right, right? That's
so,
right.
That's where the queue buildup part comes in, right? Now, there's a mechanism called explicit congestion notification, we'll call it ECN, which is designed so that the routers can give feedback to the source that, hey, don't wait for loss, I'm already seeing congestion.
Okay.
And in that model, depending on when you signal the congestion back, we will drop at that point, right? Now, we look at, right? So there are, obviously the scheme that you use to mark is critical, right? So
this ECN mechanism already exists.
ECN already exists.
Okay.
It's a standard. And the way it works is very simple. Every packet has, a congestion experienced bit.
Okay.
That's typically zero. Mm-hmm. And if the router thinks that it's congested, it marks it as one.
Okay.
Right? And this packet, when it goes to the receiver, the receiver simply echoes that back to the source.
I see.
Receiver says, hey, I got a packet that got C equals one.
I see. So that's how the sender knows that there is congestion in the network and it should slow down.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Now, before we go further, I want to talk about one problem in this approach, which is, now let's only look at the queue because that's the only relevant part here, right?
Okay.
So let's say this is the queue. This graph is essentially, this is either instantaneous or average queue length.
Okay. So this is queue length at the switch.
At the switch or the router or whatever is your bottleneck, right? Now, because TCP only reacts to the presence of congestion, not the extent of congestion, it always reduces the rate by half.
I see. So it doesn't matter how much congestion there is, whether it's, it doesn't have a notion of what percentage traffic.
It only knows whether congestion exists or it doesn't exist, right?
Yes.
So as a result, what happens here is, if you go arbitrarily, at some arbitrary point in time, if you look at the queue length, and you depending on whatever we're monitoring, you will find that there is a lot of fluctuation in the queue length. In the sense, the queue length may spike, fall back to zero, may spike again, fall back to zero, right? It will do weird things depending on how the sources are reacting to congestion.
Okay.
Right? And this again goes back to the problem that I just stated, which is TCP today has no explicit way by which it can know how much congestion happened, right? And there are proposals that try to derive that information, right? We'll talk about some of that, right?
Okay.
You could always say, you know what, TCP is sort of fundamentally flawed and maybe we need a completely different set of protocols, rate-based protocols or something like that. But all of that requires infrastructure changes. Right?
I see. So these other people have proposed schemes which
yes.
would require changes in the infrastructure, in the switches, in the routers.
Yes.
And those changes are not deployed.
They're not deployed today.
Okay.
But there are proposals that exist,
okay.
right?
Yeah.
Now, within TCP's framework, people have tried to derive the extent of congestion by implicit feedback from the network, right? So we'll talk about some of that. And even inside Microsoft, we have this algorithm called compound TCP.
Okay.
And there are actually several delay-based algorithms, primarily Vegas, TCP Illinois. There's a whole bunch of them, right?
I see.
Now, the key part in all of this is the fact that they try to sense, remember I told you that the queue starts to build up?
Yeah.
So they try to sense the queue buildup by measuring the round trip time continually.
Okay.
And
if the
round trip time starts to increase, that means they know that the queue is
building up. I see.
Right?
Yeah.
And if you look at it, it's actually slightly better than a single bit feedback from the network, right?
Right. Because you know how much the delay has increased.
You have some sense of how much.
Yeah.
Right. But it is still implicit in that sense, right? Now, obviously, a scheme like that could work, and we did try to see if it will work inside the data center. But the problem is that data center latencies are so short, and the servers don't have that kind of very high resolution, right? So just noise inside the server is on the same time scale as the round trip time in the data center.
I see. So, on the wide area, the delays are, hundreds of milliseconds, whereas in the data center, they are, tens or hundreds of microseconds.
Yes.
So many orders of magnitude smaller. And that's why hard to measure.
Which means
on
we cannot sense that delay increase at all, right?
Right?
So that means we cannot use delay-based algorithms in the data center, right?
Yeah.
So what else can we do? And that is where the design that we have come up with for Cloud Faster comes into effect, right?
Okay.
We are calling it Data Center TCP or DC-DCP. And let's see how what it does, right?
Okay.
It's actually a very, very simple modification to this diagram, right?
Okay.
This is, so to summarize this, packets are sent, anytime there is congestion, it's marked, and the congestion feedback is given back, right?
Yep.
Now, what DC-DCP does is the following. It says, I am going to try and derive multi-bit feedback from this. And how do you do that? You do that by continuously measuring whether your packets are marked. Right?
I see.
So if I send 100 packets and 20 are marked, that
yep.
means I have some sense of what is the fraction of my packets that are marked.
I see. So
right?
instead of saying congestion on or off, you're saying, okay, I have 20% congestion.
20%
or
of
so
my packets are getting marked.
Right,
right.
Right.
So
yes.
we have this parameter called alpha that we are tracking here, which
okay.
which is sort of between 0 and 1.
I see.
Now, the goal of alpha is to sort of get a fraction of the packets that are marked.
Okay.
Right? Now, we will talk about what that fraction actually signifies in a second, right? Now, let's switch to the to see how the packets get marked, because we
yeah.
need to know how the packets are getting marked, right?
Yeah,
now,
yeah. And you said some of these mechanisms already exist.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
the most important one that everybody talks about is this thing called RED,
okay.
which is random early drop. The way that works is they do a probabilistic mark based on the average queue length, you know, between, so let's say you have a buffer of size 100 packets.
Okay.
They will say, you know, at some point, maybe after 20 packets, I'm going to start probabilistically marking till some point in time, maybe till 60 packets.
Okay.
After that, I'm going to mark all packets or drop or whatever they can do.
I
right?
see. Okay.
Now, the main challenge and again, this RED is a standard,
okay.
and most switches support RED today.
Okay.
Commodity switches support
okay,
RED.
Yeah.
But the challenge is the fact that they have to monitor this thing called an average queue length.
I see. So the switches and the routers have to do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, anytime you talk about average, you have
yeah.
to talk about some control interval over which you average,
right?
Right. Now, the challenge is, long story short, I mean, the challenge is the fact that you don't know the round trip time of the flows that are crossing your bottleneck.
Right.
So what value do you
yeah.
pick to as the RTT, right?
Yeah.
As the round trip time. That's why these things are very, very hard to configure, right?
I see. Yeah.
But now because we have RED,
yeah.
we make the following change to RED in the switches. And so what we say is, hey, instead of you know, having a threshold,
yeah.
let's just start marking any time anytime the queue length, instantaneous queue length, so
okay.
we call it qint,
yeah.
is greater than some threshold that we'll call k.
I see.
So anytime
okay.
you have this, you can mark. The simplicity here comes from the fact that we've changed average to
instantaneous
queue length.
Yeah.
And instantaneous queue length is no big deal. It's there
yeah.
in the,
yeah.
the switches, so they
right.
can already do this.
It
right?
already knows how many
right.
buffers are allocated.
Yeah.
So, okay.
And the same parameters that we used to configure RED, we can use to configure this. Instead of a max and min threshold, everything is now K.
I see. So
max
so
and min
a much
same.
Simpler configuration.
Yes.
You just say, if your length is greater than K mark,
right.
so no keeping track of average Q
right.
length, no thresholds, multiple thresholds,
yes.
all of that.
Now,
okay.
now let's say this is
nice.
K.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime the Q instantaneous Q length is above K, these packets will get marked. It's below K, and there won't be any marking, right?
Okay, yeah.
So this is the scheme that this guy is going to use to mark.
Okay.
Now, if you look at what alpha actually means, alpha is essentially the probability that your queue is congested.
Right.
Right? Because if all your packets are marked,
yeah.
then the probability that the queue is congested is essentially alpha.
Yep.
And in fact, we can state it even better. It's the probability that the queue is greater than K.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah. yeah.
So once you have that alpha, the simple change to the controller is, so today, every time we get congestion marks,
yeah.
once per window, we will reduce congestion window by half.
Okay. I
this
see.
Is what today
which is
does.
Which is what you described earlier,
the sawtooth
similar
behavior.
To when you, yeah,
right.
yeah.
Okay. The standard TCP, the sawtooth behavior,
yep.
is simply every time I get a loss, once per window, I'll do this, right?
Yeah.
I will say, you know, my new congestion window is essentially half.
Half of what it was, yeah.
Now, the simple change that we have made is so as I said earlier, this only reacts to the presence of congestion, not the extent of congestion, right?
Yeah.
So now the change that we have made is as simple as we will reduce by half with probability alpha.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, if the probability of congestion is close to zero, I don't really need to cut because
yep.
I probably, you know, just exceeded it a little bit and I'm done.
Yep.
But if the switch is actually congested, the probability of congestion will be close to one
yep.
and I will react just like TCP.
Okay, so it's still keeping the same behavior where there is very high congestion.
Yes.
But when there is less congestion, it will not cut by half, but some number less
half
than
with
half.
Some probability.
Yeah.
And that
right.
probability is the number between 0 and 1,
yep.
so it's a smaller reduction.
Okay.
Now, if you go back to the queue behavior, this is going to show up as instead of you know all these wide oscillations in queue,
yep.
which happens with always cutting by half, I am going to be, you know, probably if everything goes right, I should oscillate around this value k.
I see.
And the queue length stays constant.
I see.
Right?
Because as soon as it goes above k, you reduce it a little
yes.
bit. And
yes.
then that keeps you very close to k.
Right, right.
Okay.
Now,
yeah.
we'll talk about these three problems, right? Let's
yep.
take incast.
Yeah.
I have a sudden burst of short flows.
Yeah.
I have a lot of headroom.
Yep.
To
yep.
give out to those queues.
Because
right?
each flow is taking small amount of buffer
yeah.
in the switch.
Combined
yeah.
buffer
yeah.
is still less
yeah.
than k,
yeah.
right? Now, queue buildup is not happening because I've restricted it to the small value.
Yeah. Nice.
Buffer pressure is also not happening because I'm again restricting it to this.
Oh,
that means there's
nice.
All, so we will call this the headroom that's available.
Yeah.
For short flows to come in and get completed
right.
fast, right? That's how
I
we
see.
Sort of
yeah, so like you said, fundamentally the problem was that TCP was taking all the buffer that was available.
Yes.
And now by restricting that buffer to a small amount,
right.
you can leave more buffer for sometimes, you know, short messages, sometimes, you know, mostly for short messages, actually.
Sure, sure.
Right. Yeah?
Sure.
Okay, that's great.
Now, you could go buy a much more expensive switch and put a lot of memory, but if you just use the standard TCP, it's going to try and consume all of that.
Right.
Right? So you can probably solve one of these problems, but not all of these problems.
I see. So spending more money on higher memory switches isn't really going to help all of these problems.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe it will help with one,
yes.
but it will still build long queues
yes.
and still increase
yes.
pressure on others.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's very
now,
nice.
I just
yeah, so how do you, so that's great. So how do you know these problems actually happen in data centers? And
sure. So I have some graphs that I printed
oh,
that
okay.
I'll show you.
Yep.
Just some things to show you that you know this actually works well.
Oh, great.
If folks are interested in more information, we'll point you to some website where this data is available, right?
Okay.
So just to quickly go through this, if you look at this graph, this basically the way to read this is the person. So 50% of the time So this is plotting inter-arrival time, right? And this is time.
Okay, so these are flows coming in.
Yeah.
Yep.
So 50% of the time, you know, the flows are coming in within, I think this was like 0.1 seconds or something like that, right?
Yep.
And if you look at background traffic, it's again, there's 50% of the traffic that almost comes at the same instant,
yep.
right? Which is why
yep.
this thing starts at 0.5 inter-arrival,
same.
Right?
Yep.
So these should show you that the problems are all not contrived. And
yep.
again, this is collected from data within our data centers. We've collected data from profiling some 6,000 servers, and this is data that
okay,
shows
so
that. Okay,
so this
right?
is real data
yes.
showing that these problems actually occur.
Yeah,
okay.
and these flows do coexist,
yeah.
and
yeah.
they actually coexist on shorter time scales and things
okay,
like that.
Okay, so
right?
the short and long flows happen at the same time.
Right. Now,
okay, great.
Here is a very quick performance chart.
Yeah.
This is plotting query completion time. Remember, we talked about
yeah.
the importance of query completion time.
Yes.
And it compares DC-DCP and TCP. And if you notice here, we are not just looking at the mean value, we are actually looking at the 99.9 percentile and things like that. Because even if you miss, even
so
if the quality is bad for 1 in 1,000, it's a problem, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So it's 1 in 1,000 customer is unhappy with TCP, with DC-TCP, they're all, you know, happy
yes,
with
yes.
it. Okay,
now, if you look
right.
at DC-TCP consistently, and in fact, TCP doesn't really have a problem at the mean, right?
Right.
But it
yeah.
has a problem in these outliers.
Yes.
And if you
yes.
look, we are significantly better than standard
right,
TCP,
right.
even though this is a very minor modification to that.
So when you're getting thousands of queries per second from users around the world, it really matters to keep the high percentiles low.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I have just one last chart to show.
Yeah.
Again, this is completion time, and we are looking at both short messages and query traffic.
Yeah.
There's four things being compared here, all of which we talked about. One is DC-DCP. I mean, the key point here is if you look at DC-DCP, you're getting the same kind of completion time.
Yeah.
No matter how much background traffic and how much query volume you put in, right? In fact, we have increased the short messages and query traffic by about 10 times what we observed in the data center.
Oh, okay.
So that we are sort of future-proofed.
I see. So this is one order of magnitude more than what we actually see today.
Yes.
And DC-DCP still works very well.
DC-DCP still performs very well. And so, but if you look at the other proposals, let's take the deep buffer, right?
Yeah.
Now, deep buffer obviously works, as I said earlier, but it increases the... so it works well for the query traffic, but at the expense of short messages where it is increase the completion time.
See. So it works very well for problem A, but not for B and C.
Right. Okay. Especially because these guys get stuck behind volume traffic.
Yeah.
Again, red works very well if there's a lot of short messages, right? Because it tries to maintain the average queue length to be small.
Yeah.
But because of the throughput loss that you get by these fluctuations, for background traffic, it actually has a problem because of the fact that there's very low statistical multiplexing. You know, it's high.
Yeah.
Similarly, regular TCP, we have already seen, has a problem.
Yeah.
So the key takeaway is the fact that DC-TCP is giving you pretty good performance on all of the metrics.
Wow, so it's very nice. So TCP was designed for wide area settings, but now you've gone and looked deeply what happens inside the data center, what happens inside the switches, identified real problems that TCP has and solved them fundamentally inside TCP rather than, doing hacks which solve maybe one problem but leave the other two out.
Yes.
Okay, so very nice.
And we will have all of this data in a more detailed report and in some we'll publish the links.
Okay, there you go. Thank you very much.